Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of Inside the Power Slam Ropes podcast extravaganza experience. We still don't really have a name for when we do these mashups, and that's fine. It doesn't matter. The main thing is that my name is Sandra, and I am here with Finley Martin today. Finn, how are you?
I am very well. I'm not bad at all. Happy to be back with you, Sandra, for the second episode, or second consecutive episode, of the podcast with no name.
The podcast with no name. I would call it an experience, but apparently an experience can only last for 1 week.
Well, yes. Yes,
I know that
indeed.
Was one of my main takeaways from Raw. Did you see the article that they may have changed the name of the Viking Experience again?
I saw it. Yeah, they've sent a poll out, haven't they? Asking who is it your favorite act or the act that's made the biggest impression upon you that moved in the Superstar Shakeup? That was it, wasn't it?
I think it was. And because, you know, one of the things that really upset me on Raw this week, we'll get into it a little bit more later, but the Viking Experience, which gave me so much joy last week. You know how excited I was about the Viking Experience. Now they're the Viking Raiders, and I care about them way less than I did as the Viking Experience. However, if this poll is to be believed and it isn't just a typo, and I hope it's not just a typo, I hope that they're changing the name again to the Viking Warriors, because I would love if they have a gimmick where they just change their name every week with no explanation whatsoever.
Exactly. That's going to get them over, isn't it?
Of course. I mean, I don't know how merch would really work. Wouldn't it be great if they eventually sell a shirt with all of the names crossed out? Like, the War Machine, War Raiders, Viking Experience, Viking Raiders, etc., etc., etc. Like, I would be tempted to buy that shirt because it has brought me so much joy.
That would sell better than anything that they do come up with for them. You know, that crazy suggestion would be more successful as like this ridiculous purchase rather than whatever they do come up with for them.
Probably. I mean, the WWE merch department is in need of some work, I think it's fair to say. But it seems like it's been a pretty big week in wrestling, Finn. There's actually been quite a bit that's going on. Dustin Rhodes announced on Twitter that he is done with WWE. He asked for his release and was granted his release and is moving on to other opportunities, as he said in his statement. There was a really great video that he put on Twitter of him kind of putting away gold dust and, you know, packing the gimmick up and that kind of thing. And obviously we know that Dustin Rhodes is going to be facing Cody Rhodes or Cody at Double or Nothing, the second iteration of All In and AEW's kind of debut as a company. So what did you make of this, and are you happy? I mean, I'm pleased to see it. I think it's kind of great. I was a little surprised that WWE granted his release in this current climate, but I'm really pleased for him.
Yeah, I mean, some people are saying that his contract was already up. But I mean, to me, it's like Dustin really doesn't have a place in WWE anymore. I mean, he's done all the nostalgia stuff that he can there. So, I mean, I don't really see how retaining him. I mean, they could have, if this is a situation where they had to grant him a release in order for him to face his brother at the MGM Grand on May 25th at Double or Nothing. I mean, if it was going to be one of those situations where they were doing it just because they can, then yeah. But to me, it just didn't really seem like they were going to benefit from retaining him. And I don't really see how they lose anything by allowing him to wrestle elsewhere, in particular for All Elite Wrestling. So I'm not surprised by this development. I'd heard some time back that this had been in the works for at least 6 or 7 weeks, maybe longer. So this did not come as a surprise to me. I think most people in wrestling were aware that this was the long-term plan, that Dustin would face Cody at Double or Nothing. So that's partly as well that why it didn't seem like news to me, because I'd been told about this some time ago.
Yeah, I mean, I had heard tell of this as well. And I think it's an intriguing match for Double or Nothing, because it's obviously there's family connection, and it's kind of cool that they get to face each other. I mean, Dustin Rhodes is not all that young anymore. He's 50 now. Yeah. But he's, you know, he's put on Twitter, he's training really hard. He wants to, you know, show people that he can still go, all that kind of thing. I think it's likely to be more of a spectacle match than, you know, a technical classic or anything like that. But I think it's really cool that the brothers get to face off against one another. And I'm looking forward to it personally. So I think it's great for them.
Yeah, definitely. It feels like a big match on the Double or Nothing show. I think in the venue, I think it will have a lot of heat just because of the brother versus brother thing. I mean, it's not really too hard to predict who's going to win. And I think it'll be an emotional scene afterwards. So I think this will be whatever happens. I think this is going to be a big match on that show. And it's attracted a lot of attention. Lots of people have been talking about this match and Dustin's departure from WWE for All Elite Wrestling this week. So that's what AEW needs, because, I mean, obviously it doesn't have any TV yet and it's not running any shows. So, I mean, it's all word of mouth right now, isn't it?
Yeah, it's all word of mouth, and they really need to get buzz. And I think it's, you know, it'll be good for them to put together a card that appeals to a variety of audiences, because, again, like, I love a lot of the roster that they've signed, but they don't have a lot of really big names. It's more a roster that appeals to someone like me than someone who's a casual WWE fan. And so to get their name out there, having someone like Dustin Rhodes makes a lot of sense. So, yeah, I mean, I'm pleased about it. And speaking of Double or Nothing and surrounding events, word has broken that The Undertaker and Kurt Angle have both been pulled from StarCast. This does not affect any of the Inside the Ropes events, because I know people have been asking about that. It's a very different situation, different agreements, all sorts of things like that. But I can't say that I was surprised that The Undertaker and Kurt Angle were pulled from StarCast. I mean, they both have existing contracts with WWE. I would have been very surprised if WWE let them fulfill that commitment with a company that is so closely affiliated with their main rivalry, with their main rival at this point. But Conrad Thompson has actually come out in interviews and kind of blasted WWE for it. Like, what did you think when you heard the news, and what do you make of all of this, I guess, political game?
I mean, I would have been very surprised if WWE had allowed The Undertaker and Kurt Angle to participate in this fan event, which, as you said, is so closely affiliated with All Elite Wrestling. I mean, Vince knows what's coming. He's heard the stories about All Elite Wrestling. He's heard them long before any of us, about where they're going and the money that's behind them. And, you know, it's like you've got two of the guys who are... Undertaker's been associated with WWE for nearly 29 years. Kurt Angle for more than 20 years. Obviously, he was part of TNA for a decade. But it was like, you've got these two guys that are really symbols of the world wrestling entertainment. It's really just impossible for me to imagine a scenario in which WWE would allow them to participate in this fan event that is so closely linked with a promotion which could one day be not competition in terms of putting them out of business, but competition for the same fan money, for the same fan dollars or pounds or whatever the currency is. So, I mean, the our competition in terms of All Elite Wrestling is selling a product, and people are spending money on that, and that's money they could be spending on WWE products instead. So, you know, this to me was just inevitable that they would be pulled, of course.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't think either of us were really surprised about it, but it is worth mentioning. And, you know, Conrad Thompson coming out so publicly against WWE, you know, talking about some of the details and their negotiations and whatnot did surprise me a little bit, just because he's really making no bones about, you know, trying to keep that bridge intact, I suppose. But I guess, I mean, the thing with StarCast is, does he really need that access to those stars? Because StarCast is already sold out. So... I don't know if they had like separate meet and greet opportunities for Undertaker and Kurt Angle. They must have done. I don't really know how all the pricing works, but yeah. So it's a really interesting political climate right now. And I know that they've announced Kenta Kobashi, I believe, as one of the replacements. And
yes,
which is huge. Like, that is a huge name for them to get, and it's very, very cool that they got him. So, I mean, I think StarCast is going to be fine without The Undertaker and Kurt Angle. It's a bummer that it's come to this, but it was kind of to be expected.
Absolutely.
I think one of the other things that was in the news this week was CM Punk potentially making a return to wrestling. Did you see this? That he appeared on a show under a mask?
Yeah, I saw the footage. Yeah, I mean, you're looking at it, you're thinking, is that really him? But we know he's obviously lost a lot of weight. He lost a lot of weight for his fights. And he's not in a position where he has to keep his weight up to wrestle. So, I mean, I know he's naturally quite a slender guy. But you look at it, you're thinking, is that really him? And he sort of looks a bit sort of clumsy and a bit awkward. But if you think about it, if he's going out there and doesn't want people to know that it's him, he's not going to go out there and be smooth, is he? He's not going to do it in a way where, yes, that's got to be CM Punk. Mm-hmm. So
I mean, the GTS didn't look great, but at the same time, it's not like he's been really giving GTSs to people since 2014 either.
No.
So it's not as natural a movement as it probably would have been 5 years ago. But there's something I kind of love about the idea of someone with as big a name as CM Punk just going on a wrestling show under a mask and being like, I'm going to do this one little thing and you're not going to know it's me. And that's going to be my return to wrestling. I love that. There's just something about that. It's like, it's him having fun in a building he used to work for. One of his trainers was involved. I just think it's kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine that he's going to confirm it, because he was doing this like anonymously and he was doing it for his own entertainment and for the amusement of people backstage. So I can't imagine that CM Punk is going to confirm this publicly. You wouldn't have thought so anyway, because it would defeat the whole object of going out there under a mask and a full body suit to cover up his tattoos. So, I mean, there are stories out there that this is not the first time he's done this. Also, there was an interview that surfaced online in which he'd said that if he was ever going to return to wrestling, I think the phrase he used was that he would be in a ninja suit and no one would even know it was him who was out there. Apologize, right. I can't remember the name who he did the interview with. I apologize for that. So yeah, it's just a bit of a fun thing that he's done for his own entertainment and the amusement of people backstage. You know, and good for him. You know, good for him that he would do this, because, you know, after for so long, he seemed to have absolutely had so much bitterness towards pro wrestling. And a lot of that was understandable. And it just seems to me like it's not bitterness towards the entire business, because if it was, he wouldn't have done this.
Yeah, there is something refreshing that he doesn't necessarily hate wrestling. I mean, because wrestling obviously was something he loved for so long, and to turn bitter towards something you love is kind of sad. Like, because I know people who've been involved in wrestling, obviously not at the level of CM Punk, but people who've been involved in it who now just, they hate watching it, they hate talking about it. It has left a very bad taste in their mouth. So it's one of those things where I hope, just like for him as a dude, I hope that he can find some enjoyment in this art form that, you know, basically made him and made his career and made him so happy for so long as well. So I don't know. I just think that's really cool.
Yeah, I do. I mean, it's given him the lifestyle he now has. Obviously, he earned it. I'm not saying that it was given to him, but it has provided him with the lifestyle he now has. It enabled him to do the fights for UFC. I don't know whether he regrets that now. If I was him, I sure as hell would. Right. But it's, you know, it's given him this life, or at least enabled him to have this life and to build this life for himself. So, I mean, you know, if I was him, I think I would be quite thankful for what pro wrestling has done for me. I'm certainly thankful what pro wrestling has done for me over the years. And there's been a lot of low moments for me also.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, speaking of someone who might be a little bit dissatisfied with pro wrestling or with WWE at this point, Sasha Banks has been in the news for basically nothing really changing with her situation. It sounds like she and WWE are at a little bit of a stalemate right now. And whereas, you know, WWE worked with Dustin Rhodes and granted him his release, I doubt the same is going to happen for Sasha Banks. It sounds like she's very unhappy with the company. And I think the latest report, correct me if I'm wrong, was that she might just be willing to sit out the rest of her contract.
Yeah, I read that as well. And I mean, the thing is, if she doesn't want to be a team player, I said this last week, and she can't see the benefits of the position that she would have been in on Raw had she stayed there, I imagine she would have done on Raw after the divorce of her team with Bayley, then maybe she shouldn't be there. Maybe she's better off not participating in this company. And if you're not going to be a team player, then you need to go somewhere else where you can be a team player. We talked about this, or I talked about this last week, Sondra. I mean, to me, it's like, you know, you look at the cell right now on Raw, and there's a tremendous spot right now for Sasha Banks. Turn heel, big match with Becky Lynch. Becky Lynch needs some new opponents, let's face it, and she needs some capable opponents. So she must be so down on WWE right now, so discouraged and disgruntled by the whole system for not to see the benefits there. But if that's her attitude and she doesn't want to be there, then it is her right to sit it out. She can sit her contract out, and then I'm sure All Elite Wrestling would sign her. There's going to be tremendous loads of opportunities for her once her contract with WWE ends. You never know. Maybe she just needs a couple of months off. Maybe, you know, by the end of the summer, she'll look at things differently. And if she's got, I'm not quite sure how long she's got left on a contract. Do we know that? Has that been reported anywhere?
I haven't seen anywhere. It doesn't sound like her contract would be expiring anytime soon.
Okay. I mean, if she says she's got 2 years remaining on it, maybe by July, August, she'll start to miss it. She'll want to come back and scratch the itch, you know? Wrestling's a funny thing. She's obviously really into it. She was a huge fan. I think something she really likes doing. And maybe after having a couple of months off, she'll view things differently and she'll be willing to return. And probably they'll write the whole thing into a storyline.
I hope so. I mean, I think that's best case scenario. I feel for Sasha Banks in a way, because I know she's gotten a lot of hate online for, you know, not being a team player and not being grateful for what she's given. But when you're really miserable in a job, and we don't know a lot of the backstage scenes and things that have gone on to make her this miserable in the job. I mean, I agree with you that there could be a really good spot for her on Raw as a contender for Becky Lynch. Sasha might be in a situation where she doesn't trust that that's going to happen or go anywhere, because, I mean, this is the same person who was in a storyline with Bayley for, what, like 8 or 9 months, where they were fighting and then they weren't fighting and then they had to go to therapy and then they were finally a team and then they finally, you know, reached the pinnacle and were tag team champions, and then that just kind of got taken from them and they were going to be split up for no reason. Like, I kind of understand why someone would be dissatisfied, especially if there are other company politics at play. And if you're really unhappy in a job and it's making you miserable, then I don't blame her for wanting to get out and find other opportunities. It's also the double-edged sword of, if you sign a contract for a certain amount of time, you know that you're signing a contract for that certain amount of time, and you kind of have to do what's asked of you. So it's a complicated situation, but I mean, I think the fact that multiple people have asked for their releases from WWE recently kind of indicates that, you know, culture backstage might not be the happiest it's ever been. And I guess just for Sasha as a person and for, you know, my enjoyment as a wrestling fan, because I enjoy watching her work, I hope they can reach a resolution and, I don't know, find a way to either bring her back to TV or grant a release early or something. But I don't see them granting a release early when she has so much value to other companies.
Yeah, absolutely agree. And also, you've got that thing of, I mean, on the flip side, it just to try and look at it from Sasha Banks's point of view. If you work for a company and you feel like you're being devalued by the booking or your presentation on the TV program or pay-per-views, then that theoretically reduces your market value for your next contract. So maybe she feels like, wow, you know, if I'm sticking around here, they're not going to do anything with me. And then when my contract ends, I'll be worth less then than I am now to All Elite Wrestling, which one imagines is would be her destination, because that's the companies that's throwing the big money around. So, you know, you can look at it from that standpoint, you know, and just trying to view it through Sasha Banks's eyes. Maybe that's how she's viewing things. I'm not sure. But I mean, if she doesn't want to be a team player and she can't see the opportunities and the potential for herself as a singles player right now on Raw, then she shouldn't be there. She should be sitting at home, or she should be waiting a contract out, or just doing something that's not being a member of the WWE roster.
Yeah, and let's just hope that some time away from the machine kind of soothes things and that it doesn't get messier, I suppose. Something that I don't normally watch, Finn, but you wanted to bring it up. Impact Rebellion is coming up. And
yes. Just,
so tell me some more, because I have not really been keeping up with Impact. I know that a lot of the performers on Impact I really enjoy as performers in other promotions. So tell me what's going on in the Impact landscape.
Yeah, Impact Wrestling Rebellion is the next pay-per-view from the company that will take place this Sunday at the Rebel Complex in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. The matches are Johnny Impact, who's the Impact champion, who's now a heel. Were you aware that he turned heel?
No, I didn't know this. When did he turn heel?
He turned heel on Brian Cage on, was it the, oh, listen, I'm gonna be ruffling so many pieces of paper that are going to make so much noise in order for me to get that date. I think it was the March 15th episode of Impact. I believe that's right. But he's now a heel. Taya Valkyrie is a heel as well. They actually make a really good couple as heels. He's the world champion and Taya's the Knockouts champion. So,
okay. They were fantastic as heels in Lucha Underground as well. So,
yeah, really good. So he's defending against Brian Cage, who was the person that he attacked to affect his heel turn. So that's a big match there. Actually, Lance Storm is the special guest referee. So that's
really
that's pretty big. I'm actually a few weeks behind on watching my episodes of Impact, so that hasn't been announced on the episodes that I've seen yet. I'm just looking at the lineup here on the internet, so hopefully that's correct. Also, we've got the Lucha Brothers with Phoenix and Pentagon Jr. They're defending the tag team title against LAX in a Full Metal Mayhem match. You must have seen some of their matches.
Well, I've seen some of their matches, and I mean, I know of both teams. What's a Full Metal Mayhem match?
Well, that's like kind of a little bit like the TLC, the WWE's TLC with ladders and chairs and anything that's metal can be used, kind of a bit like that.
That sounds exciting, actually. And I bet those teams are going to work fantastically together. I bet that's going to be phenomenal.
I mean, they've had like a really good storyline. We've got Gail Kim versus Tessa Blanchard. I mean, that's been tremendous. You know,
I have seen some about this storyline, right? Like Gail Kim came out of retirement to face Tessa Blanchard because Tessa Blanchard was being a horrible, horrible, bad person.
That's absolutely right. I mean, Tessa's just, I mean, she's on fire. I mean, she should be in WWE right now. If she could walk in tomorrow and be a better contender to Becky Lynch than anyone else they've got on that roster right now. And then Tessa's that good. I mean, she's so confident. I mean, she can do the promo. She's got the swagger down. You know, you can see she's really powerful. She can take the bumps she takes. They're so believable. I mean, a year, 2 years from now, she's just going to, I mean, she's so good now, but she's just, you know, she's going to improve.
She's on another level. Like I saw her live at Shimmer last October when I went, and like, I mean, the whole entire Shimmer card was fantastic, right? Like that show was phenomenal, but there's a few performers on that show that you could tell they were just elevated and they were so good and so well above their game. Like I would say Tessa Blanchard and Mercedes Martinez both had an air about them where you were like, yeah, they are amazing. And Tessa Blanchard, I think the sky's the limit for her.
Yeah, I mean, she's got such a star aura. You know, she absolutely believes in herself, and that's a huge part of a wrestler's success, that the whole psyche of actually believing in yourself and knowing you're good, knowing that the company believes in you as well. And that's something that really lets a lot of WWE performers down, and you can just see it in their eyes when they appear on TV. But Tessa, you know, is the antithesis of that. She knows she's got it, and she knows that the company knows she's got it. So
she actually has got it too.
Because
you know, there are some of those people who think like, oh, I've got it. I am the best. I am definitely what this company needs, but they don't have the talent to back it up. She's the complete package.
Well, that's
so than Lex Luger.
There is that as well. But I think a lot of pro wrestling is a bluff. And if you can convince the audience that you're really good, and you can convince the people backstage that you're really good, then that's all you really need. It doesn't matter
that's
if
true.
You're really not that good, as long as the people believe you are. You know, just like we've just been recording the Retro Heat. We were just talking about Road Dogg. And there's a guy who really doesn't do much in his matches in April of 1999, but he's so over. And you're like, what? Why is this guy so over? And he just is. And it's like really quite a superficial character. And certainly his in-ring performances, there's not a whole lot to them. And yet he's super over. Anyway, getting back to Tessa. So what happened was Tessa Blanchard had been out of control in the ring. Gail Kim had run in. She's like management. And she put her hands on Tessa. Then Tessa had complained. Then Gail Kim had been suspended. So then she, in order to make things right, she had to go to the ring to apologize to Tessa Blanchard, which she did reluctantly. Then she revealed that she'd actually resigned as like management road agent and was making a comeback. And she, this is on the March 29th episode of Impact. And then she beat Tessa down. And Tessa entered retreat mode. She's selling it. She can't believe it. She's been saying to Gail, you were never in my league in your prime. You know, you were doing pillar fights and bra and panties matches. You know, you couldn't hold a candle to me. And Gail beats her down and Tessa's selling it like just like a total superstar. Gail looks fantastic. I mean, what a segment. It is worth tracking down that segment between Gail Kim and Tessa Blanchard from the March 29 Impact. I mean, that was...
I've heard of this segment, and that's, as you're describing it, it sounds like something I really need to watch, because it sounds fantastic.
I don't think Becky Lynch has done anything that good this year. I mean, I don't think Charlotte has. Anyway, watch it and see for yourself. There was also a match on the March 29th Impact. Actually, I'll just talk a little bit about the March 29th Impact and then get back to Rebellion. I mean, this was girl power, this show. We had Glenn Gilberti versus Scarlett Bordeaux. This was Scarlett's in-ring debut for Impact. I've seen her wrestle before, and I was never really been that impressed. But Gilberti was just tremendous, doing the male chauvinist gimmick. You know, he's the veteran. You're not in my league. And Gilberti and Scarlett Bordeaux had this match on the March 29th Impact. It had been built up over weeks and weeks and weeks. You know, not just thrown out there. It was something they built up so well. It was actually a fairly serious match. I was kind of expecting that it would be a bit of a comedy match, but it was fairly serious. You could see Bordeaux's obviously green, but Gilberti did a really good job leading her through the match, really healed it up, did a lot of things that probably a lot of male wrestlers wouldn't do and was getting booed out of the building for it. Don Callis on commentary is absolutely ripping him. I mean, the whole package is pretty damn good. Bordeaux scored the pin. Gilberti's humiliated. So that was really good. Then we had the Gail Kim versus Tessa segment, which I've just mentioned. Then we had Taya Valkyrie versus Jordan Grace. Taya took the count out loss here. And then later on, we had the return to the undead realm between Rosemary and Ali and Jim Mitchell. And Kira Hogan's involved and Sue Young's involved. Kevin Sullivan makes a cameo appearance.
Taskmaster himself?
Absolutely. I mean, this is crackers. Absolutely crackers. I'm not going to try and explain it here because it'll take too long. But this program, the women of the program, never mind the women's revolution. I mean, I don't think we've had an episode of Raw or an episode of SmackDown that has featured as many segments and matches, you know, in terms of percentage of screen time as Impact presented here on the March 29th Impact. I would highly recommend everyone watch that show. It's really good. Getting back to Rebellion. So yeah, it's Gail Kim versus Tessa Blanchard. That's a match that's taking place at Rebellion based upon this angle here. We've also got Rich Swann versus Sami Callihan. Rich Swann is the X Division Championship. That's been a hell of a storyline as well between Swann and Callihan that's been going on for quite a few months, where Callihan has been trying to recruit Rich Swann to OVE. You know, they go back years. Callihan had helped Swann out when he was down on his luck when he was younger. So that's got a real emotional storyline to it as well. And the other match announced is Taya Valkyrie versus Jordan Grace, which is a rematch of the match that I just mentioned on the March 29 Impact. So that's our Impact Wrestling coverage for the episode.
I mean, that all sounds actually really fantastic. I'm going to seek out that March 29 episode of Impact. And I don't have a ton of time to watch more wrestling, obviously. There's so much of it. But just everything you're describing there sounds really cool. And Finn, are you telling me that a wrestling company managed to present women in separate storylines, multiple storylines, not just two, non-title contention type storylines, without Stephanie McMahon?
Absolutely. I mean, I know it's hard to believe.
I thought she invented women.
But Impact Wrestling proved that it is possible.
That sounds incredible. I mean, honestly, if I had more time in my day, I would totally watch Impact. I just, there's so much going on that I don't have time to really get to it, of course. But I like hearing that kind of stuff is going on in the company. And even though, you know, viewership might be much lower now that they're on channels and stuff, it's good to hear that they're doing great things, and I hope it turns something around for them, because, I mean, all the performers you're mentioning are people that I've seen elsewhere and are fantastic at what they do. So it's great to hear that good things are going on in Impact. I mean, the other show, I guess, like my favorite show that not a lot of people watch and doesn't get as much notoriety as 205 Live. And I'm guessing you didn't get a chance to watch any of that this week, Finn.
No, I have watched a few episodes. I've watched two episodes since WrestleMania. So I do understand why people like it. I mean, it's a very wrestling-heavy show, isn't it? Very wrestling-orientated product.
It is. And like my favorite thing from this week's episode of 205 Live was Drew Gulak versus Humberto Carrillo, which is a match I've been looking forward to because I've been talking for weeks about there's a storyline going on where Drew Gulak kind of recruited Humberto Carrillo when he came into 205 Live, which is kind of an odd pairing, right? Humberto Carrillo is very flippy and jumps off of ropes and all of the things that Drew Gulak stands against, right? Drew Gulak is all about ground-based offense and submission wrestling and taking it to the mat and being safe and, you know, using caution in wrestling and all those sorts of things. And Humberto Carrillo is the opposite of that. He's a high-flying luchador. So the pairing of Drew Gulak and Humberto Carrillo, with Jack Gallagher obviously in Drew Gulak's corner for a long time, was a great character dynamic. And then on the 205 Live episode immediately following WrestleMania, we saw Drew Gulak turn on Humberto Carrillo in his match against Jack Gallagher, in Humberto versus Jack Gallagher, and Jack Gallagher sided with Humberto Carrillo against Drew Gulak. So Jack Gallagher cuts a promo on 205 Live saying that Drew Gulak, you know, what was Drew Gulak really doing for Jack Gallagher? He was using Jack Gallagher to get ahead, so Jack Gallagher's not going to stand for that anymore. And it was very calm, it was very measured, it was very standard Jack Gallagher. And then he's not even on the show. He's off somewhere. He submitted this message via Instagram, so he's not involved. But Drew Gulak and Humberto Carrillo had their kind of confrontation, and it was phenomenal. The dynamic between the two of them, it was student versus teacher dynamic, right? And Humberto very much played the babyface underdog who wasn't as experienced but had so much heart and was going to use all of the moves in his arsenal to try and get one over on the dastardly Drew Gulak, who kept taking Humberto down and kept taking him to the mat. And there's one moment where Humberto actually stands on top of the ring post and Drew Gulak is on the floor, kind of, you expect Humberto to just dive onto Drew Gulak, and Humberto just kind of stops, looks at him, and waves. And he's just like, hey, I'm up here. I've got you. Like, you taught me well, and now I know what I'm doing, and I can get one up on you. Humberto Carrillo eventually does get a victory over Drew Gulak, and it's one of those situations where it seems like I should be upset. Drew Gulak is one of my favorite wrestlers. He's actual, like, top five wrestlers for me, right? Like, I adore him as a performer. But his heel performance has been so good, and Humberto Carrillo has been such a dynamic babyface for me, that the triumph of Humberto Carrillo over Drew Gulak on this episode I thought was phenomenal, and I was really pleased for Humberto Carrillo to beat Drew Gulak, even though Drew Gulak just keeps losing stuff. So I just thought it was masterful storytelling in-ring, and the build to the match was really good. So for everyone who says that 205 Live is, it is very wrestling heavy as a show, but I think they're also capable of telling some great stories. And I just kind of wanted to make mention of it.
Yeah, I mean, one thing, because the match is generally so long, that is an advantage for them in terms of telling a story in the match. Because, I mean, it's usually only two matches on the show, isn't it?
Yeah, normally. Maybe sometimes there will be like a squash in the middle.
Yeah.
But yeah, normally it's, if there are matches promoted, it's normally two. Because, I mean, also on 205 Live was, it was Oney Lorcan versus Arya Daivari for the number one contendership to Tony Nese's championship. Arya Daivari is now the number one contender to Tony Nese's championship, which should be a good dynamic. Arya Daivari is a shithead heel who is not just being a foreign bad guy. He's being a bad guy who was disillusioned with his place and is now standing up for himself and doing what he can by any means necessary. So I appreciate the fact that they're not just using his ethnicity to make him a heel. He's, you know, he's just a bad dude, which is good. Like, that seems like progress, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, Drew Gulak and Humberto Carrillo, I think it is well worth going out of your way to check out for anyone listening to this who's, you know, not going to watch 205 Live on a regular basis. But that one I thought was well worth checking out.
Do you think, Sandra, that there's any mileage in Drew Gulak forming a partnership with The Revival? You know, with their no flips, just fists? Is there mileage there?
I think there would absolutely be mileage there. I think that would be fantastic. They do have kind of a similar mission statement and ethos. I would love to see a PowerPoint presentation where The Revival are involved. Drew hasn't really been doing PowerPoint presentations lately, but no, you're right. They actually have very similar methods to wrestling, and I would love to see that. I think those matches would be phenomenal. I think character wise they'd be great. They're all good talkers. Damn it, now I really want to see that, actually. I think that would be fantastic.
Yeah, well, that could be Drew's route to the main roster, couldn't it?
It could be, yeah. And I do kind of wonder what's next for Drew Gulak on 205 Live. He's obviously in a feud with Jack Gallagher now, but it seems that Drew's been in title contention for a bunch, you know, like he's had shots at title contention and he never quite gets there. And, you know, when Cedric Alexander was champion for so long, you know, Drew had fought him so many times. What more are you going to do? Like, now Tony Nese has finally defeated Drew Gulak in the tournament to, you know, become number one contender for the championship. I kind of wonder what's next for Drew Gulak on 205 Live. I think 205 Live needs him. I think he's the most dynamic character they have, but I think he's also someone that could do well on the main roster if given a chance to talk and be himself. So I guess we'll kind of see where we go. 205 seems in kind of a rebuilding phase. We have new title contenders right now, and it's, I don't know, things are to be determined, and everything is still being shaken up, apparently.
Yeah, absolutely. The only problem Drew would have if he joined the Raw roster. Now, are the Revival on Raw? Are they on Raw?
They are on Raw, yes. Okay. I had to think about it. And who knows where they'll be next week? I mean, everyone's still moving around.
I mean, the problem with Drew Gulak joining Raw is that we've got Drew McIntyre. So I think Drew Gulak would just simply become Gulak.
Oh, gosh. He probably would. And then what happens if Rory gets signed? It's just going to be very confusing.
It is.
But, yeah, I mean, speaking of Raw, what do you make of this whole superstar shakeup, still being shaken up situation? Like, what even are they doing right now? Because Raw opens and they announce a few matches. They announce two triple threats, right? To be the number one contender for Seth Rollins. And they announce that Samoa Joe is in these triple threats. And then they spend 20 minutes on a promo train to basically set up what they just announced to us. And what they just announced to us also involves the superstar shakeup still going on, even though it was hyped as a one-week event. And what is happening?
Well, it just feels to me like they didn't think it through properly. I think there was a report out there, was it this week or last week, that Raw was being written just, I think it was Brian Alvarez had put something out saying that Raw was still being written like 10 minutes or 5 minutes before it went on the air.
Right.
So, I mean, it's just, this is just indicative of the chaos that's going on right now. A lot of the time we as viewers we do see it if we look hard enough, but if you're not really thinking about it, a lot of it can just pass you by.
Right.
But what happened this week was just like, yes, this company is chaotic. I mean, creatively it is. I mean, financially it's in a excellent position. WWE stock was valued at $100 at one point this week. So that tells you how well the company is doing right now. I mean, it's doing tremendously. So, I mean, that's what they're really worrying about. I mean, creatively, yeah. I mean, we've got people moving around, and it's just like it's hard enough trying to work out who was where anyway, with all the moves that took place and all the moves that then took place via the website that weren't acknowledged on TV. And then we had yet more moves this week. Funnily enough, last week I was talking about the Finn Balor versus Andrade match. And then you pointed out to me, hold on a minute, Finlay. Andrade's now on Raw and Finn Balor's on SmackDown. So that pay-per-view match you're seeking cannot happen. And then what happened this week?
Andrade is back on SmackDown, along with Zelina Vega and Aleister Black. Yeah, the whole thing seems so haphazard to me. I mean, I know there were reports that Samoa Joe last week was at Raw and was ill or something like that, so he couldn't appear on the show. So he comes out in this opening Raw promo train, basically saying, like, I'm here now. I don't remember if he said anything about, like, I'm going to show up when I want to show up. I mean, that seems like it was kind of the implication of just like, well, I'm here now. But he wasn't the only one to show up late, right? Like, they're making moves and they're just kind of throwing people around. It makes me wonder what the point of a superstar shakeup is if people can just kind of move haphazardly willy-nilly. I mean, the promo train was not my favorite on Raw. I thought the triple threat match between AJ Styles, Rey Mysterio, and Samoa Joe was quite good.
Yeah.
But I think he pinned Joe, right? Like, AJ Styles actually pinned Samoa Joe to win the match. Samoa Joe, who is still the current United States champion. And I was kind of confused as to why they would pin Samoa Joe in this particular situation, unless they're setting up AJ versus Joe down the line.
Well, I can't imagine they're going to do AJ versus Samoa Joe again. I mean, I think we saw on like four big shows last year.
Yeah, we really don't need to see it again for the United States Championship. Like, I am done with AJ Styles and Samoa Joe. How many more times can Samoa Joe invade AJ Styles' house?
Well, yeah, hopefully no more times. but I mean, yeah, this match, yeah, we, as you say, we had one person after another coming out. One thing that was quite, I mean, did The Miz mention Shane McMahon in that open?
He did.
He did do. But I mean, Shane, I don't think, mentioned The Miz on SmackDown. And I was talking last week about, oh, maybe Shane and The Miz will continue. But based upon what occurred on SmackDown, kind of doesn't feel like we're going to get any more Miz versus Shane matches, which begs the question, why the hell did Shane score the pin at WrestleMania? Hey, he's a McMahon. That's why, Finlay.
McMahon. That's why. I think it was just, I mean, I think last week when Miz beat up Shane on Raw, that was meant to be the final retribution, right? That was supposed to be like Miz getting one up on Shane finally before they split.
Yeah, but it's like, well, I'm sorry, people are going to remember the WrestleMania match. And okay, it was a bit of a fluky pin, but it's like, why is The Miz, who's a guy who one imagines is going to be pushed and is certainly going to be wrestling more frequently than Shane, why is he not beating Shane at WrestleMania? Because Shane's a McMahon. As for this opening segment on Raw, it just took forever. We've got everyone out talking. It's boring. I mean, they sent Baron Corbin out last to bore everyone senseless. Then we had this match, AJ Styles versus Rey Mysterio versus Samoa Joe, the winner of which would then face the winner of another triple threat match in the main event. And then the winner of that match would face Seth Rollins at Money in the Bank. So I thought this was a pretty good match as well. In the end, Styles powerbombed and then Styles clashed Rey Mysterio onto Samoa Joe and pinned Joe. From what I could work out, Joe was cut hard way at the top of his nose. I think that was when Styles powerbombed Rey onto Joe and Rey's elbow smashed Joe in the face. Looked pretty nasty. What was quite interesting afterwards was, I know at various points in the past, when guys have bled, they've got the cameras off them. But this time, they actually zoomed in on the blood loss. So it was
they did. I mean, they showed Samoa Joe, like, afterwards, not standing tall. Obviously, he lost the match. But they definitely focused on the fact that he looked kind of maniacal with his nose bleeding and everything. So it seems like they don't want Samoa Joe to look like nothing. You know, like, they did focus on him after the match. And he did kind of look like a killer. And he looked pretty upset that he lost the match.
Yeah.
I thought the finish was pretty clever with AJ Styles, you know, doing the powerbomb and the Styles clash and whatnot. Like using Mysterio as a weapon, basically, onto Joe. Yeah. I thought that was clever. I thought that was pretty cool. But AJ Styles winning it is fine. You know, it's fine, I suppose. It seems like kind of the standard way to go because it's AJ Styles and he always seems like the safe bet.
Maybe AJ Styles versus Samoa Joe. AJ Styles versus Seth Rollins might have been a SummerSlam match that could have been built up over a a period of many weeks, and maybe Samoa Joe versus Seth Rollins would have been the better choice.
I think it would have been the better choice. It's tricky because Samoa Joe is the United States champion right now. And do you want to have your United States champion going for the Universal Championship? I mean, they don't seem to think much of the United States Championship. So I don't really see why Samoa Joe wouldn't want to go for another belt. But
yeah, I think he mentioned in the promo at the start that Becky Lynch had got the two titles and that he was seeking to add a title to his collection of hardware. So it was right. brought up in the promo train, I believe. So, I mean, to me, AJ Styles versus Seth Rollins is like a SummerSlam Money in the Bank. What exactly do they have for Seth Rollins at SummerSlam? Yeah, surely not Seth Rollins versus Samoa Joe.
No, I mean, your guess is as good as mine there. I'm never great at predicting matches in the first place, and I think we said it last week, after the Superstar Shakeup, it seems like there are fewer contenders for everyone instead of more, which yes. is not really exactly what you want. So being a women's tag team champion is not great in WWE. Naomi just kind of beats Billie Kay here. Just beats her.
Yeah.
And then what bugged me about this is that on commentary, they say Naomi lost her tag team partner to SmackDown, like because Naomi and Bayley teamed last week. I'm like, they teamed for one match. They teamed for exactly 1 week. That is not a tag team partner. That is someone that you teamed with in one match. And if Naomi lost any tag team partner to SmackDown, or if any tag team partner of Naomi's is on SmackDown, it's Asuka. Asuka and Naomi were actually a tag team on SmackDown for quite a while. So really, it's Asuka lost her old tag team partner to Raw and is now in, you know, the replacement for Io Shirai and the Sky Pirates for whatever reason on SmackDown. But it's just treating Naomi losing Bayley to SmackDown like that was the reason that she really had to be revitalized here made no sense to me whatsoever.
No. I mean, no part of this made any sense. I mean, the ring announcer got Billie Kay's name wrong. Got off to a bad start. I mean, the Iconics came out to near silence, the muted response. The Iconics did their pre-match promo and Corey Graves on commentary said, "Who wrote that?" Which is like the modern equivalent of "Who booked that?" Which was a sign you used to see at WCW events 30 years ago. And then Billie Kay was defeated, as you said, by Naomi in, I believe, 69 seconds.
I knew it wasn't long.
Yeah, Naomi pinned Kay. Pretty much, it was effortlessly, really. I thought Kay's selling here was horrific. I mean, her timing is terrible. I mean, she seems to be getting worse.
She kind of does, and it's not like Naomi is really all that capable of leading a compelling match either. So maybe it's good that the match wasn't long, but the whole, I don't know, I don't like seeing the Iconics beat on every show. You know, like, if you're the tag team champions, then if anything, they should have pulled, you know, a 1999 Heat or Raw and had interference or shenanigans or something instead of just Billie Kay losing in the middle of the ring. It just kind of bummed me out.
Yeah.
Though, I mean, like you say, her selling is atrocious. She's not very good in the ring. Peyton Royce is a much better wrestler, but there are ways to get around this sort of situation.
Exactly. I mean, they can stand a count out loss. Give them the count out loss gimmick. You know what I mean? Okay, it seems like a dated 80s thing and people don't like seeing count out finishes. But clearly the WWE has decided that the Iconics are a joke as a team. They're not portraying them as serious champions, obviously. So you might as well go the whole hog and give them, you know, non-finishes in the matches. You know,
yeah, just have Peyton pull Billy out and have them just be done with this for today or something. You know, I don't know.
Just do a runner. Just get out of there. You know, maybe, and then they can get some heat and then the Iconics can gloat about it. But them getting pinned and then we saw what happened on SmackDown. We'll get to that later.
Yeah.
What else happened on Raw, Sondra, that you really want to talk about? I know there's one thing that you'll definitely want to talk about.
Oh, there's one thing I'm very excited to talk about. Before we get to that, we had our second triple threat match. Baron Corbin defeated Drew McIntyre and The Miz. I thought the finish of this was actually quite clever with Drew McIntyre hitting the Claymore on The Miz and Baron Corbin kind of sneaking in to get the pin. But oh boy, do I not need Baron Corbin in any more Raw main events, Finn.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I mean, they portrayed Corbin as, was Corbin a thief or was Corbin an opportunist?
Possibly be bothered?
That's it. I mean, Miz did the job again, but at least Drew didn't do the job. And I think Drew McIntyre was damaged quite badly by that loss to Roman Reigns at WrestleMania. I think his aura has been severely dented by that loss. And I don't think people see him as the same level of threat or the same level of star as he was prior to that match with Roman Reigns at WrestleMania. And, you know, The Miz, you know, he did the job to Shane McMahon at WrestleMania, so I guess he's got less to lose. And it was, again, it was a sort of finish where it was an excuse finish, wasn't it? Drew McIntyre hit the Claymore, and then Corbin leapt in, scored the pin on The Miz. So you're right, I didn't need to see Corbin win this match or face AJ Styles in the main event. But I guess in WWE's defense, they're not wanting to give away. They didn't want to give away Styles versus McIntyre because they probably see that as a pay-per-view match. And they probably don't want to give away Styles versus Miz either because they may see some value in that. So maybe they thought, well, this is the least worst option.
It probably was the least worst option. I thought the match itself for Miz versus Drew McIntyre versus Baron Corbin, I thought was actually pretty good, and it was the Miz show. Like, the Miz was the valiant babyface and actually felt like the valiant babyface in the match, which made me more invested in this one than in the first Triple Threat, which arguably had better wrestling. But because I wanted to see the Miz triumph, I actually got a little bit more emotionally invested in this match. And I think Drew hitting the Claymore on Miz and being the one to kind of almost score the victory, like, it was his finishing move that finished off The Miz, so that protected him slightly, so I understand why they did what they did, but I just don't need Baron Corbin in these matches. I thought Sami Zayn was fantastic on this show, cutting another promo about how he hates the fans. His dancing gets more robotic and sarcastic every week. I think he's phenomenal. I don't know what kind of story they have in line for him, but I think his character work has been brilliant. What do you think?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I mean, he showed photos of himself in, I think, was it Norway, Mexico, even Scotland?
Even Scotland. Yeah. He was in Scotland and showing how happy he was when he was away from WWE. Look at that unbridled joy. And now he's back amongst the WWE universe and everything is terrible.
That's it. He's saying that he's having a whale of a time, one with nature. And then when he knows that his comeback is approaching, he's starting to feel anxious and the anxiety is mounting. And why? Because he knows that he's gonna have to appear in arenas in front of these fans, the WWE universe. And he's saying, I'd rather be in Switzerland or Sweden or anywhere except Des Moines, Iowa. Hopefully I pronounced that correctly.
Yes, Des Moines, Iowa.
So I thought Zayn was on fire here. I don't know where this goes, but Sammy appears to be having a good time. The character's certainly getting over. We know he can go in the ring. I mean, he's probably about the most, apart from the guy that we're going to be talking about in a moment, he's probably the most interesting character on Raw right now.
Yeah, I would say he really is. And I hope that there's a story kind of in the works for him once the Superstar Shakeup kind of finishes shaking up and whatnot. If we can settle into a story, that'd be great. He did have a little like confrontation with Cedric Alexander when Alexander came out for his match with Antonio Cesaro. But like, after Cedric Alexander just gets beaten by Cesaro, I can't say that I'm really clamoring for Sami Zayn versus Cedric Alexander.
Exactly. I mean, I was going to bring that up, but it's like, and then as Cedric Alexander is making his entrance, the commentators are saying, this is the age of Alexander. And then he gets beat in his first match as a full-time Raw guy by Cesaro, who kind of feels a bit lost right now. So,
and Cesaro, who was on SmackDown last week, now he's apparently on Raw, so the bar broke up off screen. What?
Yeah. I mean, this was not a good night for either Cedric or Cesaro.
It wasn't. I mean, their match was fine. I thought it was actually pretty good, but it was a big bummer to me as a 205 Live fan to hear commentary bang on about how Cedric Alexander was the face of 205 Live. He was their franchise player. They mentioned that Drake Maverick was upset at losing Cedric Alexander from 205 Live because he was so important to that brand. And then he just loses. And I might not be the biggest Cedric Alexander fan. I was really, really ready for him not to be champion anymore on 205 Live. But it doesn't say much about 205 Live as a show if your franchise player comes in and gets just beaten by a tag team guy on Raw. Now, I think Cesaro is fantastic. Again, he is in one of my very top wrestlers of all time. But it just, the commentary and the way it was framed did not really do a lot for me.
No. I mean, If Cedric defeats Cesaro next week, or they have a rematch at the pay-per-view and Alexandra wins, then maybe this will have served a purpose. But I think when Alexander comes out next, in front of the Raw audience, I think people will think less of them, less of him, than they did before this match took place.
And by extension, less of 205 Live. Like, contrast this to when Mustafa Ali came into SmackDown and actually killed it and, like, got a big win and felt like a thing. I mean, he's not doing as much now on SmackDown, but at least he came in with a bang. This is just, like, I really kind of fear for Buddy Murphy when he finally shows up to SmackDown, if he finally shows up to SmackDown.
Exactly. So, yeah, that was very disappointing to see, but sadly not surprising.
Not surprising at all. And then, I mean, the Usos and the Revival had a backstage confrontation, which I thought was pretty funny, like with the Revival talking and the Usos pretending to be asleep as they're talking. And, you know, basically the Usos are saying, welcome to the Uso Penitentiary. And the Revival are like, hey, you were really good on SmackDown, but you're on Raw now. And I am here for the Usos versus the Revival. I think that's a feud that could be really, really excellent.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. That brings us to, are you going to say their name?
The Viking Raiders now? As of Raw, they were the Viking Raiders. We will see what they are called next week. Again, I hope that their name continues to change. They beat the Lucha House Party in not really a match. They just kind of beat them down. So again, having this right after Cedric Alexander, I was like, 205 Live is not very well represented on this particular edition of Monday Night Raw. But apparently they're the Viking Raiders now. There's some sort of compromise between the Viking experience and the War Raiders, and I'm hoping that they're just like the Raider experience next week. They were the Viking Warriors online. It brings me so much joy.
There's an American football team, isn't there? Called
the Raiders.
Los Angeles. Is it Los Angeles Raiders?
Well, there are Raiders and there are Vikings.
Okay.
I wouldn't be able to tell you what cities they belong to, but I know that there are Raiders and there are Vikings.
All right. Well, when you mentioned the Raiders experience, that's probably been trademarked by whichever team owns that name.
It could very well be. That's probably why they can't just be the Raiders, right? Because
probably is.
Or the Vikings.
Or the Vikings. Exactly.
They just have to add modifiers, apparently.
We just both showed our ignorance of the NFL.
I mean, yeah. American sports references. I know that I am American, but I am not the one to ask about sports references. No, I prefer most of my sports predetermined, Finn.
Exactly. Same here. As far as the Viking Raiders go, one of their double team moves is called the Viking Experience. They made a
point. So the name lives on.
The name lives on. So yeah, there was no match. Fans weren't really that into this beatdown. I mean, it already feels like the Vikings are in trouble. I mean, it's still early days yet. They can maybe turn it round. We'll see about that. Backstage, Sarah, who's the new interviewer, she's the one who smiles gormlessly at everything. She interviewed Zack Ryder and Kurt Hawkins, who I think called the Vikings smelly, horny, woolly mammoths.
They did call them smelly, horny, woolly mammoths. And that was not an image I expected to be watched to get in my head when I was watching Raw. It's like, I assume they were referring to the horns that the Vikings wear on their heads, but that is not the image that I got in my head.
No. Well, I'd just rather not think about that. But I wrote that down. It's like, wow, what a way to describe them. I mean, at least Kurt and Zach, they look worried. They were giving them some respect in the way that they were, you know, in their demeanor towards the Viking Raiders beatdown of the Lucha House Party.
Yes. And you know what? I mean, it makes sense. They should be a little worried, right? They've never faced these men before, and they just won their tag team championships, and they're quite used to losing matches. So it's good to see that they're, you know, selling the threat of the Viking Raider Warrior experience.
Absolutely.
Becky Lynch and Alicia Fox had a match. It was not very good. Becky Lynch is just kind of out there cutting promos with Lacey Evans now. I mean, that was kind of the point, was that Lacey Evans came out before Alicia Fox did to cut a promo on Becky Lynch, call her a nasty. Becky Lynch thinks that she's going to beat Lacey Evans. Becky Lynch is really hammering home the whole, like, WWE has a type and they just want another blonde woman to face me. And Lacey Evans is leaning into that as well, basically saying that she knows how to curry favor backstage and she's kind of acting like the corporate chosen one, even though authority figures haven't appeared with her. I am not clamoring for authority figures to appear with her. I do not need that. But this was all to set up Becky Lynch versus Alicia Fox, who was just kind of a placeholder here. Alicia Fox, her entrance is great. Her energy in her entrance as she dances out and is as extra as humanly possible. I didn't think the match was very good at all. And I mean, I've been a fan of Alicia Fox in the ring before, but this just wasn't great. I mean, Becky Lynch finally submits Alicia Fox, and Lacey Evans attacks Lynch with the women's right. She punches her twice, actually, and kind of lays out Becky. Are you excited for Becky Lynch versus Lacey Evans at all? Is this doing anything for you?
No. I mean, the promo she cut prior to the match just felt hollow, felt like an insincere speech. I mean, it was just, sometimes when Lynch cuts promos, they're believable, and other times they just feel like, here you go, say this. And this was one of those. You know, and she almost had a pitch of her voice is going up and down unnecessarily. It's kind of reminding me of John Cena. So I just thought the pre-match speech was poor. Lacey Evans said she was going to get ahead, you know, it's just like, you know, Lacey Evans is somebody who's just been pushed far beyond her station. I mean, I had high hopes for her. I thought she was actually pretty good in NXT. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought the character was something that could work on the main roster. But I mean, she had that really bad showing at Royal Rumble, and then they wouldn't let her anywhere near the ring until after WrestleMania, which was the right decision. But I feel that she should have been brought in and just gone through the roster and worked her way up, you know, faced Natalya, then faced whomever, Mickie James, all these characters. And then maybe in 6 or 9 months' time or years' time, then face Becky Lynch. You know, old school booking. I mean, she's somebody that absolutely needs the experience in a position that's not a high-pressure position like this. You know, in a low card position where there's less pressure, she doesn't have to perform to such a higher level. There isn't going to be such huge fan expectations. The matches can be much shorter as well, most importantly. So I really feel like they've rushed her into this spot. Obviously they have. It's going to be, this could be a career killer for her. I think
I was going to say this could be to the detriment of Lacey Evans, right? Because if you push her too far too soon and then she fails, then she doesn't have anywhere up to go, right? Exactly. Like once you're in the title contention picture, there's nowhere else to really go but down. Whereas if she did start with a lower level story, like say she got into something with Natalya or she got into something with Alicia or whoever, then there's somewhere to build her from there. And she would get better along the way because she would have more experience wrestling matches. So, I mean, I agree with you. I like Lacey Evans, and I think character-wise, it works. But it does kind of seem like too much too soon. And I do kind of worry about what it's going to mean for her.
I mean, I think an ideal opening feud for her would have been against Nikki Cross. That's
yes.
been perfect. Because you got Nikki Cross, who's very experienced. She's competent in the ring. She's playing a character that is the polar opposite of Lacey Evans. So you've got a load of promo material there that writes itself. You can put it on first on a pay-per-view or on a TV show. They can just go out there for 3 minutes. You know, you can do a lot of stuff where Lacey Evans is running away from Nikki Cross because she thinks that she's feral or whatever. There's all sorts of stuff you can do there. And she's not under this tremendous pressure that she's going to be under, and she now is under, facing the woman who holds the Raw and SmackDown women's championships. So, you know, so I thought the promo by Lynch was bad. And then Lynch has a match with Alicia Fox, and it's just a mess. There's just a massive blunder there. It was like were they going for a backbreaker? Were they going for a Hurricane Rana? It was an absolute disaster. They both collapsed to the mat. Then Lynch went into this disarmer, which was such a clumsy show. I sort of went into it the wrong way. It looked so clumsy. I mean, Fox was all over the place. She looked like at one point that she got really mad with Lynch and threw her out of the ring, and that was a mess. And then the disarmer finish just came from out of nowhere. There was just no setup to it at all. She's got the disarmer on, and then Lacey Evans just appears in the ring far too soon and hits the women's right.
Yeah, because Alicia Fox barely got a chance to tap out before Lacey Evans hit the women's right on Becky.
Exactly. I mean, she needed to give it a few more seconds before she came in and did that. And there's just no reaction to Lacey, and there should be. I mean, Becky Lynch, you know, by some people's estimations in the run-up to WrestleMania, was the biggest star in the company. She certainly didn't come across as the biggest star in the company here. This was another bad night for Becky Lynch.
Yeah, it wasn't great. I mean, Becky has kind of almost plateaued now that she is the champion. And yeah. I think, you know, she did more stuff on SmackDown, but I'm ready for Becky Lynch to actually feel like Becky Lynch again, right? Because she just really hasn't. Bobby Roode is Robert Roode now and has a mustache, and I'm just waiting for him to start selling insurance.
And he's in there against Ricochet, who's now a singles player because Aleister Black has been moved over to SmackDown.
Yes, he has. And Robert Roode, excuse me, I would hate to call him Bobby Roode and disparage his good name. Robert Roode actually pins Ricochet, which surprised me because Ricochet seems like he's been a lot more protected as of late. But absolutely. Apparently not anymore. I mean, everybody has to lose. I don't mind that he lost a match, but it just kind of came out of nowhere. And now Robert Roode is angry and has a mustache. And I mean, he looks a lot like Rick Roode. He looks so much like him. And I'm just waiting for him to put on a poop brown suit and start selling me insurance and telling me I need to pay the premium to get the policy. Because that's my experience with Rick Roode. So
Yeah, well, my experience with Rick Roode's a little bit different to that.
Most people's experience with Rick Roode is a little bit different to that. Everyone's talking about like painting faces on tights and stuff, and I'm like, nope, insurance salesman. That's what he is to me.
Yeah.
Favorite thing on Raw by far.
Can I just say something? I mean, it really felt like Ricochet came across as an expendable act here. The way she was jobbed out to the glorious DDT. Roode's definitely a heel. He said that Chad Gable had been dead weight, had been holding him back. Reddy Young actually said something of interest on commentary. That doesn't happen very often. When she said that Roode was creepy due to his moustache. I don't know whether it was really made much sense, but it was something that was worth writing down. It's not often I write anything down that Reddy Young says.
That is true. Wouldn't it have been nice to get a story where Bobby Roode turned on Chad Gable and we got dissension there? I mean, after being former tag team champions, but they just broke up off screen. Like I think my main criticism of this entire shakeup that apparently is still shaking up is that there are multiple teams that are broken up. There are multiple like people who are moved, who've been in alliance with one another. And it just all happened off screen. Like you have so much content to fill and yet some of the interesting stories that you could have been doing, you just decided to do on a whim?
Yeah, you've just torpedoed all these storylines and these matches and these feuds that had built-in storylines behind them that you didn't have to try too hard to make people care about, and you've just blown it. I mean, what's Chad doing on SmackDown, as we saw on Tuesday?
Losing to Jinder, like, just fighting Jinder Mahal and then getting beaten up by Lars Sullivan. So clearly Chad Gable, they just see as fodder. But I mean, you could have used him as fodder to Bobby Roode in an interesting story, at least, instead of just being like, he could be anybody on SmackDown getting beaten up.
Exactly. And Ricochet didn't need to be in this position. And I hope he's going to be all right. But this just felt like, this was like, oh no, I just couldn't believe it. It was like, this was like, you've jobbed out Cedric Alexander. You've given us that Becky Lynch versus Alicia Fox disaster. And now you've just beaten Ricochet to Robert Roode. And it was just like, and as you said, Roode and Chad Gable could have done something. And there was a match some weeks back. They lost. And afterwards, the camera lingered on Robert Roode, or Bobby Roode as he was at the time. And he looked really upset that Chad Gable had done the job and lost the match for his team. And it did seem like they were going to do a split shortly after that. And it was something they had teased. It was something that, you know, the groundwork had been done. And instead, Chad Gable's over there on SmackDown, and instead Robert Roode's here. And I mean, this, you know, this has only got the tash. It's a comedy act. It's only ever going to go this far. It's not going any further. Yes. So it just seems like wasted potential to me.
It's absolutely wasted potential, and I think that's kind of indicative of this entire shakeup. I don't know, the whole thing is just kind of an exercise in frustration. But thankfully, Finn, we have the Firefly Funhouse to bring us some joy in our lives. I have been looking forward to talking about the Firefly Funhouse with you since it debuted on Monday. Bray Wyatt is now the host of a children's show, and there is a fun theme song talking about how glad we are to be friends, and it's a friendship that will never, ever end.
And Bray Wyatt
comes out and is what he comes in the door and he's all excited to see everyone, and he has puppets that he introduces us to: Mercy the Buzzard, who's wearing a Hawaiian shirt, Abby the Witch. We don't know who the rabbit is in the logo. I hope we get introduced to the rabbit later on. I love all of this. What did you make of the Firefly Funhouse? All of the subtle madness.
Well, you predicted it. You predicted last week. Many people have predicted this. I mean, I was amused by it. I mean, you've got to give WWE credit for taking a gamble here and doing something, you know, radically different.
It is different.
This is a departure. You know, I mean, Bray Wyatt as a character was just as dead as a doornail. I mean, the character's no mileage at all left in it. It was a car that had run out of fuel and the gas tank cap was soldered on and you couldn't put any more in there. So, I mean, it was just like there was nothing really left for Bray Wyatt as a character. So by changing him now into this character. Now, did they put a name on the character?
Bray Wyatt.
Okay. Right.
He introduced himself and he said his name was Bray Wyatt. And so this is very much a continuation of the Bray Wyatt character, right? Because he also says, I used to be a very, very bad man, and then looks all despondent and everything. And the crowd boos because there's a laugh track, right? Like there's a studio audience, yeah. and they're booing him and he looks all, you know, penitent. And he's just like, I deserve that. But I keep around a reminder so that I never become that, you know, disgusting. I can't remember the exact wording, but so that he never becomes that Bray Wyatt again. And then there's the cardboard cutout of old Bray Wyatt in the butcher's apron with the fedora. And this Bray Wyatt, eventually he takes a chainsaw and maniacally chops through the cardboard cutout. So apparently he said he was always going to keep this around to remind him, but now he's just cut it up. There is madness lying beneath this children's host Bray Wyatt. He is going to snap, and I am so excited and here for it. Like, this is such an interesting character, and the details that they put into the Firefly Funhouse, like I said, Mercy the Buzzard, right? Like, Bray Wyatt has had so many promos about Mercy, and he's wearing the Hawaiian shirt, obviously a reference to Waylon Mercy as well, who was a big inspiration for the Bray Wyatt character back when he came up with it. I thought it said Peppy the Witch when I first watched it, but Bray Wyatt did put out a tweet yesterday where he said hashtag Abby the Witch. I'm going to try and pull up the tweet as we're talking because it was actually interesting. Let's see. Oh, he put out a tweet that says, I love stockholders and I love all of you. Hashtag Firefly Funhouse. Hashtag I miss Roman. Which is a reference, obviously, with his feud with Roman Reigns when it was anyone but you, Roman. Hashtag kayfabe, hashtag NFL draft, hashtag baby shower. Obviously, his partner, JoJo, is pregnant currently.
Yeah.
Hashtag process over outcome, hashtag Abby the Witch, hashtag maestro, hashtag Indiana, hashtag pecs, hashtag merch, hashtag Jason Baker. So Bray Wyatt is having a lot of fun with this character, and he's having fun with it on social media. He's having fun with it in the vignette. You could tell he really loved what he was doing and was having a blast with it. This is completely 100% right up my alley and made for me with all of the details and all of the references to past Bray Wyatt canon. My Wyatt family headcanon is running wild. I mean, we can only assume that this happened because Matt Hardy threw Bray Wyatt into the lake of reincarnation, right?
Well... Are they going to acknowledge that? I mean, that was some time ago, wasn't it?
It was.
We haven't seen Bray Wyatt on an event since August of last year, I believe. I mean, I enjoyed the character. I think the segments have potential. What I'm having a hard time working out is how this can work in an arena setting before a live audience after the initial novelty pop has worn off. Also, the fact that he's bringing up, as you mentioned, he didn't identify himself as Bray Wyatt. I guess that must have just got lost in the sense of lost this week amongst all the other information that I've had to digest. So we've got a cardboard cutout of himself there in his previous incarnation as the leader of the Wyatt family. And as you said, he used a chainsaw to cut the head off that cardboard cutout. So is he going to revert to that character? Is that the end here? Is that the destination of the Firefly Funhouse Bray Wyatt children's TV presenter character? I think it's fun as a, as in this context, in this setting, as a, in segments. I think that can work and they can do a lot with it, but I'm not sure how it really going to work in front of a crowd. And how is it going to work in terms of matches? Is he going to smile? Is he then going to be evil? Is he going to be a case of when he's, is it going to be this like metamorphosis in the matches? Does he come out smiling, almost like the Eugene character? And then when his opponents, you know, beat him down, he regresses to the Bray Wyatt character of the 2013 to 2018. I mean, I suppose there's a lot of different directions you can take this character in, but I'm just, I don't know, I'm having a hard time seeing it working in front of an audience as a TV presenter.
Part of my brain agrees with you. The logical part of my brain says you are absolutely right, Finley. This could very well not translate to an in-ring product.
Yeah.
The me part of my brain loves it too much to care. Like, right now, I think the possibilities are endless. And I can't say that I trust WWE enough to handle this with the care that it probably needs. Because if you remember when Bray Wyatt himself debuted as Bray Wyatt on the main roster, he was phenomenal. And he was phenomenal in NXT. And that character had so much mileage and everyone wanted him to basically be the new Undertaker, but he was a different twist on it, right? And it didn't really go that way because they didn't really have an end game. So it was hard to believe in Bray Wyatt because all of his threats started to feel empty. Right.
Exactly. Because he never won. Did he never won the big matches?
No, he never won the big matches.
Very seldom did.
And he was always in high profile feuds, you know, like facing John Cena and facing Dean Ambrose and facing The Undertaker at WrestleMania. Less said about that, the better. But he was in these high profile situations, but just kept losing. And it was kind of like Samoa Joe on SmackDown last year. Like, you can be threatening and really great at your job, but if you don't ever win and your threats never come to fruition, then it's really difficult to put any stock in you and believe what's going to happen. Right. So yeah. I think this is a reinvention, and this is a chance to kind of turn all of that on its head. Like, maybe he had to change his persona because what he was doing wasn't working. He never wants to go back to that guy whose threats were empty. He doesn't want to make these threats. Like, we don't know if this has been a mental break for him, if it is a lake of reincarnation. Like, that's my personal theory, is that he did go into the lake of reincarnation and that's why he has had this complete like character shift and whatnot. Yeah. We could see old dark Bray Wyatt come out. And if old dark Bray Wyatt comes out in the ring and starts winning things, then maybe this is what he needed to do. It could be like a split personality situation, like Joseph Park in Abyss. Hey, there's an Impact reference that I actually know. I don't know. It seems like they have so many possibilities and the sky's the limit. I think everyone wanted Bray Wyatt to be the new Undertaker. I was talking about it with Mr. Saunders yesterday, and we theorize maybe he's more like Mick Foley than The Undertaker. Like, maybe he's going to have these different personas and each of them can be different characters and he can kind of start to play into more comedic timing and that kind of thing. Maybe he'll be more effective as that character. I really want the best for him, is what all of this comes down to.
Yeah, I mean, I was a huge fan of Bray Wyatt as well in 2014. I think the penultimate issue of Power Slam, he was on the cover of it. And the headline read, "The Brilliance of Bray Wyatt." And I did like a 2-page feature on him. And I was so optimistic about his chances. And then he wrestled John Cena. And, well, it was all downhill.
And then it was all over.
Yeah. So, I mean, I do get the comparison there, the similarities there with Mick Foley and, you know, Dude Love and, you know, Mankind and Cactus Jack. I mean, the difference was that Foley was over. And the problem with Bray Wyatt is that for so long before he disappeared last summer, he was not. People were just bored of him because the character was not doing anything new. It stalled. I mean, it had just been regurgitating the same crap for at least 18 months, maybe 2 years. And there have been so few highlights in that period. So, you know, I enjoyed the segment. But it's really hard for me to get excited about it because I'm trying to work out how this plays out in an arena setting. And okay, that first appearance, it's going to get a pop. Maybe the second one will as well. But by week 3 or 4, especially if on week 2 the pop's down, you I do fear that Vince will lose interest and he will just then revert to the old Bray Wyatt, and they'll say, oh, it's not working, because WWE so often gives up on things rather than persevering and really seeing them through. And that was the problem with Bray. It was a character that in 2014 had so much potential to grow into something far greater, you know, like a Jake Roberts or a Kevin Sullivan or something like this, with so many layers and so many different aspects of it and characters that could be brought in to work with Bray, and it just never materialized. And instead, it was just recycling the same old material over and over with diminishing returns. So in conclusion, Sondra, I did enjoy the segment. I'm looking forward to next week's Bray Wyatt's contribution to next week's Raw. And I want to hope for the best. I hope for the best for this guy as well. I hope they can make this work, because years ago I was a fan. I think the guy's got talent, and I think he can be so much more than he was last year and had been in 2017.
And I wouldn't even be upset if it takes a while to get to the in-ring presentation of him, if they do these vignettes weekly and they keep working.
Yeah,
I don't want them to just be like rehashing the same material. But I mean, look at the Fashion Police a couple years ago and how well that worked, having different vignettes every week. And then eventually, you know, they got their match with the Usos at Backlash in Chicago. And that was, I mean, that match saved that show for me. Like, I got to see that live and it was awesome. Like, most of that pay-per-view sucked, but the Usos versus the Fashion Police, like bringing out their disguises and all that kind of stuff, they managed to make it work in ring as well. And obviously they're comedy characters. Bray Wyatt, I think, could make it work as a comedy character or as a comedy character with dark undertones. Like, I really want the best for him. Bray Wyatt was my favorite wrestler for a long time. Like, I was a big fan of his in NXT, and I thought, you know, he was going to be one of the big NXT success stories, and it hasn't quite happened yet, but I guess we shall see if it actually works this time. I just really hope it does.
Yes, so do I. I mean, yeah, I'm all for him, for them taking the time with the segments and to just keep running them. I mean, when you think back to when Matt Hardy made the transition to Broken Matt Hardy in WWE, he had so few segments, and I know that Vince never really understood the character and was never going to be on board with it because it wasn't his invention. So, I mean, it was doomed. There was no way that was ever going to make it in a WWE setting. This, on the other hand, is a WWE creation, so the mentality towards it will be different. But yeah, I hope they're going to persevere with it, and I hope they're going to give it time. And yeah, don't rush it into the ring.
I want to see guest stars appear on the show too. I want to see other characters show up. I want to see Nikki Cross on this show. Yeah. I want to see Chad Gable on this show. I want to see all sorts of people just kind of show up on the Funhouse the way they did on Fashion Police as well, right? Like, I think there are possibilities to help get other characters over the way Fashion Files did for The Ascension. So I have high hopes, I suppose. Not high expectations, but high hopes for the segments, I should say.
Yeah. Perhaps Bo Dallas could make an appearance as well.
I would love that. So many people were saying how much Bray sounded like Bo. And at the end, he says, all you have to do, and I swear I thought he was going to say Bo leave. And if he did, I was going to be so, so happy. But he didn't, which makes sense. But it was obviously an allusion to Bo Dallas. It seemed very intentional the way he said it in the same cadence as his brother, because they do look and sound very much alike.
Sure.
The main event of Raw was AJ Styles and Baron Corbin. It was boring. Styles won. We're getting Seth Rollins versus AJ Styles. That's happening. It seems early. It seems early for Seth Rollins versus AJ Styles, but
yeah. I mean, we mentioned that earlier in the recording. And when Rollins came out, you're like, wow, Seth's a lot taller than AJ.
He is. Yeah, they had a little handshake. You know, Seth puts out his hand and AJ looks like, is he going to shake his hand or not? And eventually he does, but in kind of an aggressive manner. And I mean, it's going to be good. I'm sure it's going to be good. I'm a little surprised they went with babyface versus babyface for this, but it's better than Baron Corbin versus Seth Rollins, I suppose.
Yeah, you can say that again. You know, it feels too soon for this match, especially at Money in the Bank, where you've got the Money in the Bank ladder matches, which really carry the show. Mm-hmm. So I don't think they really need it. But maybe they're thinking, well, we've got Roman Reigns versus Elias. That's not exactly a blockbuster match. Yeah. And we need something big from the Raw brand in addition to the ladder matches. So
I suppose.
Yes.
Yeah, Roman Reigns versus Elias was set up on SmackDown. Shane McMahon was recapping Roman Reigns punching Vince McMahon. And Shane McMahon did have a great line here where he said, I mean, what type of man would attack another man's father like that? It's just disgusting. Obviously, in reference to Shane McMahon attacking The Miz's father. So he's just a disingenuous prick. Shane McMahon, the worst human. Shane called out Roman Reigns and Elias attacked him. And I guess we have this Elias Samson and Shane McMahon alliance now.
Yeah.
And it weirdly kind of works.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, this is a good move for Elias. I mean, I can't imagine there's a single person on planet Earth who thinks that Elias is going to win. But no. I mean, it's a big match for him. An association with Shane's good for his career. I mean, we know they like him. I mean, he could be a mid-card champ, but he's never going to be the top man. But it's a good spot for Elias. And, you know, this association with Shane McMahon, it's going to tie him over nicely. And I'm sure he's going to take this match with Roman Reigns seriously. Hopefully, Elias will get some offense in and it won't be, you know, a four-minute squash. Hopefully, it'll be 8 or 9 minute match and Elias will be allowed to get some real offense in on Roman and some false finishes. I mean, it could be a career status enhancer for him if he can get a few near falls in that people buy on. So, yeah, I think Elias right now, I'm sure he's smiling right now.
Oh, I'm sure he is. And it's feeling like kind of an effective use of Shane McMahon, too. Because it's more of them in a partnership. And it's, yes, they are kind of rehashing Roman Reigns versus an authority figure, which isn't something I'm clamoring to see. But this time it's Shane and it's not Vince. And it's a different dynamic. Like Shane and Elias being together just kind of came out of left field. But I'm weirdly okay with it. I think I kind of liked the dynamic later in the show when they kind of run away, right? Like Elias is backstage and Shane McMahon is like, hey, we should get out of here. And they drive off in a limo together. I think there's an opportunity for some pretty fun shenanigans, and Shane McMahon being the worst human is kind of more effective character work than he's done in a long time. I think I'm just going to praise the glory of The Miz for bringing that out in Shane.
Yeah, and Shane and Elias can both speak, which is good because Roman really can't.
No, I mean, he does all right when he's just good dude Roman Reigns, but beyond just being good dude Roman Reigns, he's better at actions than words, for sure.
That's right. So they can carry that end of it.
Yeah. And I think Roman looks pretty decent here against two authority figures, them beating him down. You know, there are two of them involved. Roman's not wearing his vest anymore, so it's a little bit more believable when he's getting kicked in the ribs and it's actually hurting. I don't know. It's easy to criticize Roman Reigns and the booking of him, but it's kind of working for me right now, which is nice.
I thought it worked quite well. Elias gave Reigns drift away. I mean, it did seem like when Reigns came out that he might get booed, but by the end, people were cheering him and people were booing the villains, which is the way it's supposed to be, as we all know.
Exactly. So we did get our Finn Balor versus Andrade Cien Almas match. Finn Balor did get his win back. He pinned Andrade after the coup de grace. And I was kind of expecting this to maybe go to title feud contention after they moved Andrade back to SmackDown, but does this seem like the end of it? Do you think we're going to get more of the two of them?
I've just written here, all the good work of last week has been undone.
Yes, it does feel that way. It just kind of feels like nothing's really going to happen from it. I mean, maybe they'll do more with the two of them. The match was great. Really enjoyed the match. I like Zelina Vega interfering, but it kind of feels like we're just kind of going back and forth and nothing's really progressing. It's just trading wins.
That is the thing, is that Andrade had scored that huge win last week over Finn Balor. And it's like, wow, that could lead to a title match between them, you know, and I don't need to go over what happened last week and where we're at now. And like, here we were. We're in a position where they didn't have to do that match here. What they could have done was they could have had Andrade and Zelina Vega come out and then talk about how Andrade had scored that big win on Raw last week. You know, people were shocked. You know, people are even more surprised that we're back on SmackDown, but we're here because Andrade, he wants his title match and he wants it at the pay-per-view. Why didn't they give us that, Sondra?
I don't know why they didn't give us that. And they could have given us that. And then if they're determined to use my beloved Chad Gable as fodder, they could have maybe had Andrade versus Chad Gable here. And Chad Gable would have lost to Andrade and I would have been sad about it. But at least it would have been a match and it would have
furthered a storyline and a purpose, instead of later on when Lars Sullivan just attacks Chad Gable and the Singh brothers before Chad Gable versus Jinder Mahal can get underway. I mean, it's not like I'm clamoring to see Chad Gable versus Jinder Mahal again, but the whole thing is just an exercise in Lars Sullivan being a big old monster, I suppose. Like, can't he attack Shelton Benjamin? Can't he attack, like, what are the colognes doing?
Well, exactly. Anyone, someone. So, I mean, if you're getting destroyed by Lars, I mean, the star of this segment here with Chad, supposed to be, as you said, Chad versus Jinder, that was the match that was supposed to happen. It was interrupted by Lars Sullivan. The star of this felt like R-Truth. You know, he's like nearly my age. You know, he was the one who was the only one who had the balls to stand up to Lars. And obviously he got beaten down because Lars is the killer. But it's just like, you know, Chad's this guy who's this real talent. Yeah, we could have had Andrade versus Chad. They could have had a hell of a match, you know, that could have enhanced both. Thus leading then to the Andrade versus Finn Balor match at Money in the Bank for the title. I mean, to me, Andrade is the guy who should be holding that belt, and Finn Balor is the guy who should be moving him up. They should be moving him in that direction of Kofi Kingston.
You know, he's make a lot of sense to me.
Exactly. I mean, to me, this is beneath him. He is beyond. He's above IC title level. And this belt should be on someone like Andrade or Chad Gable or someone of that level. And the title then has the potential to elevate them. You know, so I was on a real downer after the Finn Balor versus Andrade match. I just thought, oh, you know, you had the opportunity. This was just so easy to book, and you can get people over here. And instead it's just that even Steven booking, it's just like, right, that guy wins this week. Well, then the other guy wins next week and everything stays the same.
Not saying that they have to book the way that we say they should. They have to tell the story that we're saying they need to tell. But it would be nice if they told us a story that got us invested and got someone more over and made someone feel like more of a star instead of just a flat nothing landscape, right? And speaking of being disappointed, Kairi Sane versus Peyton Royce. Kairi Sane just pins Peyton Royce after the elbow very quickly. And Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville walk out and they kind of like clap at Kairi Sane and Asuka, because they still are obsessed with Paige and trying to be Absolution for some reason, even though Paige was always a dick to them. But again, Billy Kay was just pinned very easily on Raw. Peyton Royce gets pinned very easily on SmackDown. I did enjoy Peyton Royce's promo where she said that last week she was dehydrated and she couldn't help what happened, but this week she drank an entire gallon of water and she is ready. And then did you see the backstage segment that was on WWE.com and YouTube about Peyton being overhydrated?
No, I did. I did hear Corey Graves. I think Corey Graves or one of the announcers mentioned he theorized that could have been the reason for the quick loss.
Yep, that's what it was. And they have a fantastic segment on YouTube. It's worth seeking out where they're trying to be interviewed, and Billy Kay and Peyton Royce are just like aghast that this interviewer is bothering them at this particular time. And you know, Peyton is overhydrated. She drank too much water. She needs to find this balance. She even added amino acids, but it wasn't enough. And then they like go to the bathroom and come out very quickly, and the guy's like, Are you done already? And she's like, I was overhydrated. It came out fast. And like, the Iconics are just, they're gold as characters. They're absolutely gold. I wish that it were translating more to the ring, or that they were depending more on shenanigans with the Iconics in the ring. Because them just losing all the time is not great. And it doesn't really make me feel a whole lot of value in the tag team championships if the champions can't even win a match ever.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not that they're losing. It's the way they're losing. They're losing like this just devalues the championship. I mean, it's like when the team ends the Iconics reign, I mean, it won't, they will then be tasked with the responsibility of rebuilding the status or the prestige of the title, because right now it's about as far down as it goes. We've talked a lot about the Iconics on this podcast, Sondra. I don't think we really need to go over it again.
No, we probably don't. It remains an exercise in frustration, basically. Yeah. I think one of the biggest talking points from this show was Charlotte Flair and Becky Lynch having their face-to-face confrontation, because we haven't ever seen Charlotte Flair versus Becky Lynch in a face-to-face confrontation. But this one was actually pretty interesting. You know, Charlotte Flair says that Ronda Rousey lost her SmackDown Women's title. Charlotte Flair didn't lose it because she didn't get pinned. And, you know, of course, she's she's pulling the whole, like, how are you the champion when I didn't get pinned? And Becky Lynch was like, it was winner take all. You do understand what that means. I won. I was too busy beating Ronda Rousey, the baddest woman on the planet. And I thought they had a pretty, like, okay back and forth. But what I liked the most was that Bayley comes out to the ring. And Charlotte Flair is basically telling Bayley to get to the back of the line. And Bayley actually stood up for herself and challenged Charlotte Flair to a number one contenders match. Charlotte and Bayley, I thought, had a really good match. I really enjoyed this match quite a lot. But Charlotte pins Bayley, and Charlotte's the number one contender, and we're getting Becky versus Charlotte again. Becky Lynch is the champ, so she is doing two matches at Money in the Bank. I was really disappointed that Charlotte won this match. Not that Charlotte Flair isn't incredible. Charlotte Flair's been getting a lot of hate online, but I thought that Bayley looked incredible on this show for the first time in a long time. She felt like Bayley again. She hit the microphone out of Charlotte's hand. She stood up for herself and said, no, like, I am going to take my opportunity, and then showed in the match that she can absolutely go and be killer in a match. Bayley versus Becky Lynch would have been something new, would have been something interesting, would have been something different. And we're just going back to Charlotte versus Becky already. And I was kind of disappointed about it. What did you think?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, it's like, I mean, Charlotte and Becky Lynch is a, excuse me, Charlotte and Becky Lynch is, I mean, that's a match you can go back to later in the year, but surely not at the pay-per-view after WrestleMania. I mean, they had a match at Fastlane, right?
Yes.
That's right. So, I mean, so they battled at Fastlane, WrestleMania, and Money in the Bank. And as you said, I mean, it was an opportunity to put Bayley over Charlotte. And people would have been shocked by that outcome. And Becky Lynch could have reacted to the outcome in such a way as like, wow, Bayley is better than I thought. She really is a threat to my title. It's a different match, which we have we ever seen that match on pay-per-view? I don't think we have.
Bayley versus Becky? No.
Yeah, I don't think we have. We certainly haven't seen it for the title. So it's a different match. Charlotte can take the loss. She can withstand a defeat to Bayley. I mean, it's a competitive match. Whether we like the Bayley character or not, and I agree with you, she stood up for herself here. She showed some backbone, which is something that she should have done all along. She let people know that Charlotte is not going to talk down to her. She's going to put Charlotte in a place, or at least she did until she lost. So, I mean, this is what you want. This is what people want from Bayley. This is what people want from babyfaces. They want babyfaces who are willing to stand up for themselves. You know, like this was the thing that whenever Stephanie McMahon was around and was browbeating or, you know, being an ogre to the women, and the women were cowering in fear. The damage she was doing to the entire women's division was just... it was just acute. It was just like, why is this happening? Why is somebody allowing this to happen? Can you not see the message this is sending to the public about, you know, how gutless the female roster is, that they will not stand up to Stephanie McMahon? So yeah, Bayley did this with Charlotte, and yeah, it would have been what a story it would have been had Bayley defeated Charlotte, and instead Charlotte defeated Bayley. Yeah, it was a good match. But it was just not a surprise, really, that Charlotte went over. And now we've got this match between Charlotte and Becky Lynch for the SmackDown Women's title at Money in the Bank. So Becky Lynch is pulling double duty. She's defending against Lacey Evans, and then she's going to defend against Charlotte, or vice versa. So, yeah, it's, what can you say, Sandra, at this point?
It just feels like more of the same. It doesn't feel like anything's progressing. And it feels like, I mean, I understand they want to get heat on Charlotte, and this is a way to get heat on Charlotte, right? Because it's gotten to the point where people hate Charlotte so much that anything she does, people are going to cheer whoever is against her. So it almost feels like the roles are reversed, whereas Becky was so over as a babyface for so long. And now it just feels like we want anyone but Charlotte. She really is getting, you know, kind of the Roman Reigns treatment in a way from the crowd. And at least she's a heel and she can harness it. But it's just, it's frustrating how repetitive it seems, because you want something new and different to grow after WrestleMania. And the women's division is in dire need of more stars. And I think they had a chance to make Bayley a lot more of a star and a lot more of a player here. And they just decided not to do it. And that's a bummer.
Of course. I mean, they just needed to show some courage, needed to show some ambition here, you know, and be, you know, proactive. Let's make this thing happen. And I believe that Charlotte is going to defeat Becky Lynch for the title, because this Becky Two Belts gimmick is only going to be a short-term thing, surely.
Yeah.
So, assuming...
Either that or the Money in the Bank winner could cash in.
Yeah, assuming that Charlotte defeats Becky Lynch for the title at Money in the Bank, who does Charlotte defend against on the next episode of SmackDown, or the episode of SmackDown subsequent to that, or the next pay-per-view? Who is that? You know,
I mean, right now there's no one that's built up. They have women exactly. She could face. I mean, she could face Ember Moon. She could face Bayley again, but she just beat her. So exactly. It's not like you're clamoring to see that.
Exactly. It's like, why isn't the system making stars instead of preserving the status quo? And that's what we had earlier with Finn Balor and Andrade. It was like, oh, wow, Andrade scored this huge win over Finn Balor. He's going places. He's a star on the rise. Oh, no, he's not. Never mind. Yeah, he's just done the job to the guy that he beat last week. So let's not get excited about him. Let's not invest in him. Let's not imagine that he could one day be a headliner, because he's just like all the others and he's been put in his place. And as had the roles been reversed here and Bayley had defeated Charlotte, then it would have been Bayley, Becky Lynch. Had Bayley defeated Becky Lynch for the title at Money in the Bank, okay, maybe she would have been booed. At that point, maybe they do the heel turn. Who knows? But at least you've got Bayley with the title, and that sets up new matches. And you can do Bayley versus Charlotte down the line. That's mm-hmm. a new match. So, you know, it just feels to me like WWE, it's almost like the rationing. It's like we're being rationed. It's like instead of like it being bountiful and all this stuff for us to dine on, you know, as fans, it's like, well, we're just going to ration everything. So we're just
Have too much emotional investment. Don't care about our product too much.
Yeah, we're just going to give you a little bit to get excited about, but we're not going to give you too much. And it just feels to me like that's what they're doing.
It does kind of feel that way. I mean, the main event of the show was actually pretty fun. Kofi Kingston and Shinsuke Nakamura had a match. I think the main talking point was after the match, Kevin Owens and Xavier Woods kind of made the save because Rusev interferes. Rusev wearing a smart purple suit jacket that I enjoyed quite a lot. But Kevin Owens ends up turning on Kofi Kingston, super kicking Xavier Woods. I can't remember, but... Kevin Owens has already turned on the New Day. It turns out that friendship was not made to last forever, and Kevin Owens remains the worst friend ever, and now it looks like we're going toward Kevin Owens versus Kofi Kingston, and that's something that I am cautiously, because of the way this company wants to ration emotional investment, but I am looking forward to Kevin Owens versus Kofi Kingston. I thought they pulled the heel turn pretty effectively. I mean, it was soon, but I don't think that Kevin Owens needed to be in the New Day for very long for people to boo whoever is going to turn on them. What did you make of this turn, and does it work for you?
Well, I know it works for you, Sandra, because last week I was predicting that Big E was going to turn on Kofi Kingston. You were like, no, the New Day must be preserved forever.
Yes.
So as soon as Kevin Owens did the super kick on Kofi in the post-match, I was like, yeah, the New Day is safe. I know someone will be happy about that.
I'm very happy about this. See, we both win, Finn. We got a turn within the New Day because the Big O was entrenched as part of the New Day, but it's not one of the original three members, so my heart doesn't have to be broken into a million pieces, and people still got the heel turn they wanted. Everybody wins.
Everybody wins. I mean, I thought WWE thankfully hit the bullseye here. I thought this was great. I mean, Kevin Owens and Xavier Woods, they've been at the New Day commentary table during the match, and they kept flicking between the regular SmackDown commentary team and Xavier Woods and Kevin Owens, who were there at the New Day commentary table. And then they came in at the end. I thought the turn was brilliantly executed. I mean, it's absolutely what needs to happen. If they're not turning Big E on Kofi, then to me, Kevin Owens was the next best thing. I mean, I actually would quite like to see Big E as a heel, because I think that is something we've never seen. Well, we've obviously seen him as a heel in WWE, but what I mean is we've never seen him as a heel post-New Day, and we've never seen him battle Kofi Kingston in this arrangement that we have now. I think that match could be huge. But I think for now, Kevin Owens versus Kofi Kingston is a more than adequate substitute for that. Owens is better as a heel. I mean, I like him as a babyface. There were so many things he could have done, but they can always turn him again down the line. And they needed somebody for Kofi. And Kevin Owens is a tremendous opponent for him. I don't think anyone believes that Owens is going to dethrone Kofi, and nor should he. But they can have he's a credible challenger, I feel. They can have a really good match. We know Owens is golden on the mic. So, yeah, really pleased with the outcome. I mean, this was SmackDown needed an ending like this. And I thought WWE came through with flying colors.
Yeah, I mean, after a show that was just kind of flat and full of a lot of nothing, I think this is definitely what it needed. And I do like the fact that they turned Kevin Owens before we were sick of him as a babyface too, right? Like, he hasn't been cloyingly annoying as a babyface yet. Like, because sometimes when he's a babyface, he can be over the top, like, you know, with the New Day last week, like swiveling his hips and stuff. It was fun. And they did this before it stopped being fun. So yeah. I appreciate that about it as well, because it was like, oh, we liked you, and therefore I feel heartbroken that you are now a dastardly person because I was invested in you as a good dude. Yeah. So yeah, I thought this hit it out of the park, and it was an ending that we needed after some major disappointments on Raw and SmackDown. But I think that's all for us here today. Thank you for joining me again, Finn. Where can people find you online if they want to get in touch?
Yeah, they can find me on Twitter at Finlay Martin, and my website is finlaymartin.co.uk. And where can people find you, Sandra?
You can find me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. Check us out on Patreon, patreon.com/InsideTheRopes. We're going to record a very quick overrun. It's probably going to be about 15 minutes because I have to get to work and there's all sorts of things going on. But we will have a quick overrun up there later on this week. You can check out youtube.com/InsideTheRopes for interview content. Lots of stuff going up there after WrestleMania weekend. InsideTheRopes.co.uk for tickets to live events. And whose theme should play us out this week?
Well, it's got to be Kevin Owens, I think.
I think that makes absolute sense.
He saved the week. Either Kevin Owens or Bray Wyatt. I'll leave it up to you, Sandra.
You know what? I think that we'll play the Firefly Funhouse theme song and then play Kevin Owens theme. Because why not have both?
Why not?
Thanks for listening, everyone. Bye.